Hello, and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady, and this is podcast number 246. The treble hasn't happened, and for younger Celtic fans who wonder why we've got such a poor record of attaining trebles over our long and grand history, where we can reach European finals, where we can win European cups, but we win so few trebles. That's why we've won so few trebles, because they cheat. They cheat. Start, finish, end, cheat. They cheat. Miraculously, they connived to stick, what was it, 5-6 cheats on the park at the same time? Quite incredible. Now, I understand the premise that some in the media would have with modern technology, 20 cameras at a game. Why? What's in it for them? Why would they cheat so blatantly and have themselves held up for ridicule? Well, answer me this question, for those of you who think can't possibly be a cheating fiasco. The referee clearly had, you can see from TV evidence, an uninterrupted view of that. There was a guy, Alan Muir, behind the goals. He was 3, 4, 5, 6 maximum feet away. And then there was the North Stand linesman who had the direct line. So either they cheated, or you've got a major problem because three of your top officials are blind as bats and incompetent. So cheating, blind as bats, stroke incompetence, right at the top level of Scottish football. SFA, you need to tell us, because it's one of the two. Both the answers don't seem satisfactory. In fact, it's such a bad view that the guest we've got on this podcast today managed to see it was a handball from thousands of miles away. Yes, it's Mr. Mark Cooper. So, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper, discussing Cheatgate. So I'm joined by Mark Cooper to discuss Cheatgate and Portogate. So, Mark, first of all, why would anyone copy the Porto model?
Can we go on to the next question? I just had a whole series of tweets from Eddie Pearson there on the wind-up. I assume on the wind-up. Because they're the most successful, proportionally to their budget, they're the most successful team in Europe. But I assume he was winding me up.
But they just got a doing tonight from Bayern Munich. 5-0 at half-time.
Who scored that goal?
I don't know. To be honest, I genuinely don't know because I've been on a plane tonight.
That's fine. What else? Apart from Bayern Porto, are we talking about anything else?
Yeah, we're going to talk about Cheatgate. We're going to talk about the fact that you can have how many officials does it take? It's like a Ray Charles convention. How many Scottish football officials does it take to see a handball? None. They were all unsighted.
You thought it was a penalty? You thought it was deliberate?
I thought it was a penalty. Yes, I was 110 yards away, and I wasn't unsighted to see that it was a penalty. You were even further away than me. Did you see it?
From 8,000 miles away, I saw it. 8,000 miles away, lying slightly hungover in my bed, glancing up at a computer screen. And it was, my first reaction was to laugh, because this will probably slightly annoy all Celtic fans who, you know, travel from Ireland and all around Scotland to go to a game. But at a time where 1-0 up, fairly comfortable. Inverness were playing fine, to be fair to them. But, you know, 1-0 up. It looks like we're going to win the semi-final 2-3-0. And my first reaction to... It was so blatant. It was just funny. For me, it was just kind of like... And then you see the replay of it, and you see... You're always wondering about where the linesman is. And then I forgot, I know there's a guy behind the goal, and he's literally 4 metres away from me. And both him and the referee have a completely unobstructed view, and they're both staring at this guy who raises his hand. It isn't even like he's got his arm outstretched and, you know, it hits his arm, and, you know, you can have a kind of bit of a debate. His arm goes up. And it's just like, that is so ridiculous.
So
whereabouts were you sat in the stadium?
I was sitting in the south stand, level with the byline at the opposite end of the pitch.
Okay, yeah.
And the ball goes across, and your first reaction is, he's hit that with his hand. He stopped that going in with his hand. And you know how poor Hamden is for sight lines. And that's your immediate reaction. And you can tell, by the way, the whole of the Celtic fans at that end of the ground en masse go up. And the way the Celtic players are going up, you can just tell that it's a penalty. And we don't get it.
And even the boys, I think quite a lot of people have said this on Twitter and wherever, but the boys' reaction to it, that in itself was pretty funny. Like, he had this reaction like, aww.
I know, what have I done?
I'm sent off as well. God's sake.
So... Yeah. To try and go things, first of all, why do you think we didn't get a penalty?
I would find it difficult. This isn't excusing the referee. But I could, you know, as a Celtic fan refereeing a Rangers game, it's difficult. It's difficult to give key decisions that are going to win Rangers a football match.
Yeah, but then you've got to... These guys are probably jobs worth sticklers for the rules type of guys, where rules are probably even more important than what team they support.
Possibly, but that implies that there's some sort of repercussion to not fulfilling the rules correctly. Now, if he has a kind of punishment that he thinks that he's going to be to you know, like, he'll be taking East Stirling versus whoever next week and for the next 2 months as that kind of inexplicable decision merits, to be fair. Then, okay. Then you might be a stickler for the rules. If there's no repercussions, then, you know, this guy's been taking complete character assassination. But this guy's been, you know, like, ridiculed by, like, Skirtle was absolutely slating him after a key, like, Slovakia game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a whole series of poor decisions from this guy. But still, he's got a Scottish Cup semi-final. And he'll be one of the, say, three referees that will be, you know, like, earmarked to take the European games along with Colin. Jeez.
But aren't you highlighting that he's just not very good rather than he's anti-Celtic?
Yeah. Well, in the last part, yeah. In the first part was me implying that he's a Rangers fan and he would.
And he's a dirty cheating hun.
Yeah. No. It would be, I'm saying this, but it's, at the same time, I think most regular people would be able to give that decision against Celtic, against your club, or the opposition. I'm kind of giving an explanation for why, which would be kind of almost, you know, plausible, but...
You've got a linesman, and you've got a guy behind the goal. Surely they're not wanting... To put the argument that's been put to me by a journalist, you can't seriously believe that he intentionally didn't give it. Why open yourself to such massive ridicule when it's obviously a penalty?
And well, the weird thing, I can imagine it being especially difficult if it's a key, if it's last 5 minutes and it's 0-0, and you know, like it's actually going to have an influence in the match. But at that point, I wouldn't have thought that he would have thought, oh, this will completely influence the match, to be honest. Like, I'm going back on my original point, which basically supports a point that it isn't just a Rangers fan, you know, like, not giving us an obvious decision. But then it's so obvious, and there's two of them.
Yeah, I can't believe that you've got three within 20 yards because it's on the linesman's side of things. And in any other game in Scottish football, we would be querying how the linesman didn't see it, not just how Muir behind the goals didn't see it. In fact, the linesman's getting away scot-free in this because there's an official who's 3 to 4 feet away. You know, in the camera angle that you see from the north stand side, which was the first one I saw when I was at the game, you can see his leg, because he's so... It's almost like he knows it's coming, because he's so sure that something's going to happen. He's like a foot onto the pitch, crouched down, hands on his knees type thing, waiting for this to happen.
Is it unobstructed, is you? I can't remember the linesman.
Well, you're then saying... This is the thing about... If you say it's one thing, it's then leading to a bigger problem, because if you're saying it's they were unsighted. The referee picked a poor position. If you consider that this was a guy, the ball is headed across goal. This is the only guy between the only Celtic player in that position, and the only Cali player between the Celtic player and the goal. It's happening 2 yards out. And if it doesn't hit his arm, it's going in the back of the net. So it's a pretty crucial point in the game. It's a from the flight of where the ball's going to go, it's a reasonable position the ball will end up there. And what you're saying is that the referee, the guy behind the goal, and the linesman can read a game so poorly that all three of them got themselves into the wrong position. Well, put it this way, I was the same distance away from it as the guy behind the other goal, and I was halfway between the incident and the linesman on the main stand side, and I saw it. So even if those three are in the same position, you'd expected one of the other officials to say, "What the fuck's going on down there? The guy's just punched the ball off the line." Excuse my language. I'll need to mark explicit. Yeah. I'll need to mark explicit
exactly
on the podcast.
That's how sad I am. I immediately thought of bloody iTunes. Anyway, the referee, I didn't think the referee's position was that bad. He's looking at it from 15 yards, completely uninterrupted. The decision's terrible. What was his explanation for a decision today? Because they released, they made a statement, didn't they?
Yeah, but I don't know if they put in his...
Okay.
Statement. Griffiths says that Alan Muir during the game said to him, it hit his face.
Okay.
Now, I worked with a guy for 10 years who was an SPL linesman.
Yeah.
He'd been a referee to second tier level and was told if he wanted to do Premiership games, he needed to become a linesman, so he'd like to do that. And I think it was about the time, remember when Kenny Clark didn't, and this is a bit, I know I posted up the video yesterday, but this is a bit that the media sort of ignored, this type of thing that's happened in the past. Remember when Kenny Clark didn't give the penalty against Lennon, or for Lennon being fouled at Ibrox, and then afterwards said, I should have given it. He didn't say, I was unsighted, and once I watched it on the television, I should have given it. He said, I should have given it. Which means he thought about giving it and decided not to. And I remember discussing it with my colleague who was a linesman at the time. And he said that, obviously, they all go for their training camps, and they're not all pals. There may be 30, 50 of them there, so they're not all in the same. So there's wee groups of guys who are pallier than others. And he wasn't part of the Kenny Clark group, so he said he couldn't comment for them. But him and the group that he was pally with all agreed that a decision that benefited Celtic in big games was analysed in the media more, at the time Rangers existed, more than a decision which benefited Rangers in big games. So if that was... For example,
a throw-in at Motherwell?
Yeah. Gets debated in the media longer for more about Celtic. The natural consequence of that, because despite what the press say, these guys are humans, the natural consequence of that is you hesitate fractionally longer and replay in your head a major Celtic decision more than you do, because it's natural human nature that a decision's gone and you think penalty and you go to give it. And he said, but for Celtic, you might think, but was it definitely? And that pause immediately means you're less likely to give what your gut feel decision is. I've always had that in the back of my head. He was also the guy that told me, and this also gets back to the way the Celtic fans were and the way that the Celtic players reacted, because he was also the one that told me about once before, prior to this, about, you know how players claim for everything? You know, a player kicks the ball out and then asks for a throw-in. And he said, but you know when, by the, it's a different type of reaction when you've made the wrong decision and a player complains. It's just that the way they react is just marginally different.
Kind of incredulous.
Yes, and the way the crowd react is a different reaction. The crowd will sometimes react because they're not actually saying you've made the wrong decision. They're just annoyed that you haven't given the decision that favours their team. He said, so see for it, you give a corner kick, and immediately by the reaction of the home crowd behind the goal and the players, you think, bollocks. That was the point.
Yeah.
And he says, so what you do in that situation is, as the corner comes in, you blow for a foul in the box. Because there's always a foul going on in the box and nobody will ever query what it is. See, since the day he told me that, I now see that all the time in games. Celtic games and other games, corner kicks given, you think that wasn't a corner, ball's coming in, referee blows and you think there's no foul, you've just done that thing.
Yeah.
So putting those two things together, the reaction of the Celtic fans and the reaction of the Celtic players, what if anybody still Sky Plus the game or whatever, watch Alan Muir at half-time when the Celtic players go up to give the referee and the officials a hard time. He's got the body language of a nervous guy who knows he's mucked up. He knows it.
The only thing to which I don't completely agree with was, because there's no Rangers anymore, I don't think that opinion that a decision that benefits Celtic will have more kind of airplay than it currently does now, because it isn't that neck and neck thing. So we're the kind of drivers of all the complaints, kind of, or a much larger kind of, you know, group of people who are much more kind of passionately involved in these key decisions, whereas, you know, Rangers fans at home might be slightly annoyed at a decision that kind of favours us in a cup game, but they're already out of the cup, you know, 6 months ago. They're not in the same league as us. Whereas all of this media reaction and all of the kind of fan back and forth and the club kind of getting involved and putting out a statement, I would now assume that that's now reversed. And if that was true to begin with, that referees and linesmen have this kind of pause, that we would now be the beneficiaries of that.
Yeah, but that might... This is still relatively new. That culture is still there. I mean, I actually wondered... I was thinking about it today, because, as I say, I've calmed down marginally since Sunday. I've not felt like Sunday since the height of the cheating years under Rangers. And I did wonder... I've been thinking it through and I've been talking it through with mates. I do wonder whether there's an element of... McLean's running fast, ball's moving fast. Your point of, what's your first thought when you're a supporter of another team? That it hits his hand, and his first thought is, did that hit his hand? If you're a Celtic fan, your first thought is, it hit his hand. If you're a Rangers fan, your first thought is, did it hit his hand? And you say to Muir behind the goal, did it hit his hand? Now, the most common response I've had from people when I put on that vine that I did of the close-up of Muir speaking.
And what's he saying?
The most common thing that people have said to me that he said is pass, pass, pass. Which at first, when people were saying it, made no sense, until a guy said, that's what referees say when they can't comment on an incident when they're talking to each other. And I thought, right, so you're running fast, you're a bit of your immediate reaction is, shit, did that hit his hand? You say to Alan Muir, did that hit his hand? And he says, pass, pass, pass. You then say to the linesman, did that hit his hand?
And he also did say pass Tansy to Draper. I'm sure he said that.
Clear it. And you might say,
Krusty's teeth.
you might say to the linesman, did you see it? He might say the same thing. Pass, pass. But at which point, play's gone on for 3-4 seconds. You've had that hesitation. There was a part of me wondered, maybe we might have got the penalty if the ball had gone out of play. Ball goes out of play. We surround the referee. Referee goes to Muir and the linesman, and they do that going and standing away, and they've had time to think about it, and McLean says, I think it hit his hand, and Muir says, well, I can't be certain, and maybe the linesman says, yes, but you were the closest, did it hit his face? And Muir says, well, no, I don't think it hit his face. And McLean then says, well, it must have hit something, and if it didn't hit his face, I thought it hit his hand, penalty kick. If you're trying to be generous, perhaps the part of the problem was because the play kept going and it took 3-4 seconds and there was nobody given a 100% decision. And hey, Celtic are winning 1-0. They're comfortably winning the game anyway. It's not the end of the world.
But you know that you do realise that this plausible and quite generous kind of evaluation of the events isn't really going to placate the thousands of people who are listening to this right now.
No, I should go.
Commuting into work.
I should go on the app by them in.
Livid at you.
I should go on the app by them in podcast if I'm going to be this nice. Me and Lawrence can chat away about the non-controversial moments of the Scottish Cup semi-final. Yeah, but to be fair, I'm just trying to find a plausible, non-grassy knoll reason as to how Celtic didn't get a penalty.
In fact, Grassy Knoll was referenced in the By the Minute podcast I listened to today.
I've not had a chance to download it yet. I've only had the feedback from people who say that Lawrence is I was going to use a non-PC word from the 1970s. I managed to stop myself at the last second. That Lawrence was being too gentle.
I was wondering if it is being devil's advocate. You haven't heard it, so this is basically a propaganda for the 5 minute podcast. Download it.
It's like a bad version of this.
I just agreed to it. I nodded my head then, agreed to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the actual game, though, the actual game, apart from the decision, didn't you think Inverness played well? Like, they had the two defensive midfielders, Tansey and Draper, and every time they got the ball, they had both fullbacks were right on the touchline, about at their line or possibly a little bit higher. They had Christie coming at a kind of option, say 15 metres in front of him. They had the two, what's the boy's name, Marley Watkins and O'Ferry. Christie, Watkins, O'Ferry, every time the ball was played to them, it was almost like one touch, spin and play out to the two wing-backs. I thought the players were really well drilled. And there's quite a few times when, say, I remember there's a time after about 8 minutes or something, and say the ball goes back to Essen. Griffiths runs, closes Essen down. As the two centre backs kind of peel off to kind of make an option for the goalkeeper Essen, Johansson makes his kind of customary 20-yard dart to close down. And then the other Celtic players kind of remember, we have to press as well now.
Yeah.
So Johansson goes forward, presses, but the movement of the ball from Inverness was so quick. Like, this happened so many times that, say, Johansson ran there, the centre-back quickly gave it a 20-yard ball into Christie. Beaton went towards Christie. Christie had spun before Beaton got to him, and had already put it out to Shinney, and they were on the attack. And Shinney was in acres of space. And this happened time and time again. And I remember watching it, like, it seemed we were off the pace and they seemed quite comfortable and all. I was pretty impressed with them, to be fair.
I thought they played well. Having said that, I did think they dropped off the pace a bit once we scored that goal. And this is the whole crux of, you know, for years I used to get frustrated. You'd be leaving Ibrox with a defeat, you'd be listening to the press saying, but apart from the penalty that the referee never gave, he got all the big decisions right. And you'd be screaming at the radio saying, but that was the biggest decision of the game because it was such a game-changing moment. Or the other thing, Hugh Keevans used to say this, Celtic can't complain because Celtic should be good enough to win without. Well, so in effect, what you're saying is Celtic should be two goals better than every team they ever play because you're just going to have to take the fact that people cheat.
Yeah.
If we'd have got that penalty, the crux of it, and this is why any discussion of the events after that start to become irrelevant, but we'll discuss the performance in a minute. Any of the other events of, well, Zaluska half their guy and things like that, the whole game would have been different because even if we'd missed the penalty, they would have gone in at half-time, 1-0 down at Hampden, on the big open spaces of Hampden, with 10 men, with Celtic in the lead. And Celtic would have either been in the lead by one goal or two. If it was two, game over. Then getting back to the performances, once that does happen, I thought at times we were a bit off the pace. I thought Matthews wasn't playing well. The general consensus of everybody is the same, that when Gordon goes, it should have been Commons off and not Forrest, because Commons was not playing well.
Yeah.
And then I felt our heads went down when we went to 10 men. A bit, not completely, but I felt I tell you what I noticed, your point there, I tell you what I noticed, and I tweeted this about a minute before Van Dijk goes and scores the free kick. Ronnie Dyla was at the edge of the technical area for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, non-stop in the first half, having a go at the defence the whole time for being too deep, you could see he was having a go at people for sitting too deep and playing the ball too slowly, because I tweeted, Dyla is not happy with the defenders. It was all four of the defenders he was having a go at for non-stop for 20 minutes at it. And then, so, we go in, we don't get a penalty. What do you think of their goal? Is it a penalty? Should Gordon have been sent off? And who was at fault?
It's completely a penalty. It's completely a penalty. I don't think there's a discussion. Whether or not he... Whether or not he catches that ball, that's a key thing for the sending off, right?
Yep.
And, you know, you can argue either way. Well, you can have different interpretations. You can see it in a different way. That is it completely implausible that he catches that ball? I don't think so. I wouldn't disagree that much with that decision.
No, but the ball was trundling at such a pace, I think if Gordon hadn't pulled him down, he could have got to it.
And then you have to, like, when that decision, when the tackle's made, then what's the kind of interpretation of a decision that if Gordon hadn't impeded him in any sort of way, could he have got that ball? Or are we saying that, you know, like, he has to avoid the challenge or whatever, which, you know, slows him down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who's at fault for a goal? Well, the pass back, obviously, for...
To be fair, Matthews is
trying to recall...
My interpretation is Aguirre's at fault. It's a poor corner by Commons. When you're defending a corner, you have two fullbacks. One is right on the halfway line, one's a wee bit in front of him, whose job it is basically to slow play down, to hold play up until your defender, the rest of the team, get back. The poor corner by Commons, they boot it out, goes to one of their guys. Izzy Gary goes for it and misses it and gets taken out, so that Matthews is left one-on-one with a guy played in behind him. So for me, it's Izzy Gary that's at fault, because if Izzy Gary doesn't go for that, Izzy Gary and Matthews slow the guys up sufficiently that Celtic get men behind the ball. And then Matthews, to be fair, it's not a proper pass back. He's just trying to stick out a leg to put in a challenge because the guy's beating him for pace. Because I didn't think Matthews was playing well. In fact, Matthews, to me, limped through most of the extra time.
I'll have to see a replay of it again.
So then, after that, they make it one each. And we're down to 10 men. Then they make it...
I remember, as you were saying that they had their heads down, I seem to recall a game last year where we went down to 10 men and we just steamrolled over our team. I'm trying to remember, was it a Ham?
I can't remember.
I'm trying to remember. Anyway. When we went 10 men down, I was still completely confident. Well, not completely. I was still confident that we would win that game. And then even when they went 2-1 up, they're quite composed from the boy laying it back to O'Ferry. It's quite a nice goal. That even at that point, I was thinking, they're going to choke. This is what these teams do, they choke. And Essien, individually, he himself choked. But even in the last couple of minutes, I was still expecting us just to do something. It wasn't lethargic, but it was this kind of uninspiring performance. Like, there wasn't much creativity. I thought Forrest in the first 25 minutes was very good. Like, he received the ball four times, and the first four times he beat men and, you know, carried the ball, say, 20 yards, 30 yards each time, with think the fourth time culminated in Van Dijk's free kick, where he goes past the centre back. He's taken down Van Dijk was in. But apart from Forest, there wasn't that much kind of like energy on the ball.
No, I didn't.
It was pretty dull.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, there was some people commenting. To be fair to us, with the way that Inverness were playing, I mean, patently, it was even more of a game plan once we went to 10 men to stretch the game as wide as possible on the big pitch of Hampden. I thought a lot of our players looked tired in extra time. I tell you what, I thought Guidetti looked motivated for about the first time since Christmas. He actually came on and looked as though he thought, this is my game, I'm going to be the hero, I'm going to change this game. And then scores the free kick.
Yeah. But it wasn't good.
No.
It wasn't a good free kick. And, like, I was watching it thinking, he might do one of these Cristiano kind of knuckleball, whatever they call it, the free kicks he was doing at the start of the season.
Yep.
For both Sweden under-21s and ourselves. And I was kind of expecting it. And he hits this ball, and he's possibly trying to do the same technique. But, geez, like, that keeper. He was already on the floor. As the ball's bouncing, the ball bounces at waist height. And he's, like, stretching his arm up almost from the floor to try and claw it away. And you're like, jeez. Like, I was celebrating, obviously. But yeah, you're right.
Put it this way, I found it harder to believe that ball had gone in than I did from 110 yards away than I did that it was a penalty earlier in the game.
Yeah. Would you play Guidetti against Van Dijk? Because I was thinking when it's on the tube, I was listening to the podcast, the By the Minute podcast, available on iTunes. they go on. And I was thinking, yeah, I'd probably play Guidetti. I thought Griffiths, nothing was sticking. He wasn't retaining the ball, and there wasn't like much interaction from Griffiths back to one of our three attacking midfielders, and then back to Griffiths again. It was all pretty. All of them seemed to be pretty far away from each other, and there wasn't a lot of interplay between them. And he looked hungry and fairly motivated. He probably, yeah.
So you're playing tomorrow night against Dundee?
Yes. Yeah. I would.
So what would your team be against Dundee to try and sort of... There's a part of me wants to move on a wee bit from the Dundee game, from the Inverness game, because, well, we know we've been cheated. But it is what it is. That's why we win so few trebles. That's why we've won so few trebles.
It's funny. I was close to tweeting that, and then I saw you do it. there you go.
But it's true. Growing up, I used to think, how come they've won so many trebles and we've won so few? I know why.
Yeah.
So, Dundee game. What would your team be against Dundee?
Sorry to go back to the treble thing. This is going to annoy another faction of Celtic supporters listening to this. But the treble thing, like, I'm not that bothered about it, to be honest. Yeah, just because I don't care about the League Cup.
Oh.
Like, I've no interest in the League Cup. But the League Cup for me is just like, we have no kind of... feeling for it at all.
We've never been well in the League Cup.
I remember going to the League Cup. Yes. The last one, like when we played Kilmarnock, is here with my parents and we're watching it. And it's just like, almost felt like, it serves me right because I don't care about it.
Yes.
Like, I'm going because it's, you know, a cup final, blah, blah, blah.
You just can't get you. It's like getting a present at Christmas that you don't really want. You feel that you should be looking excited, but, but deep down you're thinking, it's a jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? I don't. It's a jumper. I wanted an Action Man tank. I'm not interested.
It's the sequel DVD of a film I didn't initially like anyway.
Yes.
I have no interest in this. But thanks. No, the Scottish Cup I like. And also because it's the last game of the season. Yeah. And, you know, it's on terrestrial TV. The whole nation's watching it. And, you know, nice and sunny and whatever.
Apparently they're moving the Scottish Cup final to Broadwood this season. Sorry, what were you...
For me, like, the last... Almost since Maribor, I've just been thinking about these qualification games.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, like... I know everyone, you know, people have to move on from things, but they're so obviously the biggest games in our season.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole, everything has to be, when we're out of that, and okay, you have to also concentrate on the league and, you know, the UEFA Europa League. But now I'd be thinking, if Aberdeen drop more points, I would be contemplating putting Ambrose and Mulgrew at centre-back. And again, there's another faction of Celtic fans that are going to be screaming at this podcast. But if Denai is away and they want him to do the pre-season at Man City, apparently, and if we want to sell Van Dijk, we probably don't want to sell Van Dijk with a day to go.
No.
Like, I wouldn't want us to sell. I would prefer, if we're going to sell Van Dijk, try and get it done fairly early on. Because part of my annoyance at our last minute, I understand the kind of economics of we need to know when the Champions League, blah, 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 before we buy, or there's a different kind of level of investment.
Yeah, and there's certain players who will not move to us until they know Champions League outcome and things like that.
Yeah. But actually, Skepovic and Gudetti, kind of, we were looking at Skepovic before, right? And yet, we bought them both afterwards when we went in the Champions League.
Yeah.
But that, you could then argue that we had another higher...
Or maybe they themselves, the other clubs that they were looking at, then went somewhere else.
Yeah, that's true. But one of my slight annoyances about this whole issue is that the gap between the last qualification game and the first Champions League game is so short that it isn't even like, okay, so you buy in a good striker, and say Griffiths has just scored two goals away, you know, Slavia Prague. We've gone through. We then buy a striker. Griffiths starts the next game in the Scottish League, scores another two goals. When we then have the next game, which is, you know, Bayern Munich away or whoever, the new signing probably doesn't go in. So you need, like, it'd be so much more preferable to all of, or as much as possible of your signings right at the start. They're coming in for the first day, first week of pre-season, second week, and they have that 8 weeks together with the guys. They know the way the team is playing. And then when you get into Champions League, they've already played six European games, they played two, say, Scottish week games, and they're kind of bedded into the whole kind of way the team's playing, and they know their roles and responsibilities, blah, blah, blah. Because otherwise, by the time they get bedded into a team, we're already three games into this Champions League group.
See, the other reason, your point about let's see if the one benefit of not being in the Scottish Cup final is let's see if we can, if you know, if we win on Wednesday night, and it'd be good if Aberdeen could lose a game, because I think if we win on Wednesday night and then win at Tannadice in the first game after the split, and Aberdeen were to lose one of those games, I think actually we could win the league on the Friday night at Celtic Park against Dundee. We don't need to wait to go to Pittodrie. Now, people forget about one aspect of it, and it was highlighted when Rangers went bust, and there was some Rangers players' contracts were put out there.
Yeah,
they have a holiday entitlement. It's in their contract. They get X weeks holiday a year. Scott Brown will be playing for Scotland on June 13th.
Yeah.
Craig Forrest will probably be in the Scotland squad on June 13th. Craig Gordon will be in the Scotland squad on June 13th. There's a possibility of one of Armstrong, Mackay, Stephen and Griffiths might end up in the Scotland squad, because I can imagine that may be a squad you might have withdrawals because it's after the season's finished. So there's a possibility of them. I don't know if Wales are playing. I don't know if Belgium, you know, even if we manage to do, people are talking about doing a Foster with Denier where he goes to Man City, but we then take him for another year's loan, which I think would be beneficial for his career. Because I see Man City getting a new manager, Klopp or whoever, in the summer, who will be given loads of money to spend. So I don't see Denier getting in the team. He'd be better off staying with us. So say that does happen. I don't know if he'll be, if Belgium have got a game. I don't know if Israel have got a game, that Beaton could be away. We could have players who are playing football until the 13th of June. Now, I would imagine with our Champions League format, we're probably back on the 1st of July or something like that. These guys have got 2 weeks off. Johansson with Norway, I don't know. So, if we can tie up the league, if we can win our next three games, Aberdeen lose one, and then we could tie up the league on Friday the 1st of May, and I would be saying, particularly to Craig Gordon with his knee, and I'd be saying to Johansson, who's played all these games, away on holiday for 2 weeks, come back for the last game of the season where we win the trophy, and then that means you're playing a game, you then can go for 10 days away for the national team, play your games. I'd be looking to give players, and then you're giving them a two-week break. So they're actually getting 2 weeks on, 2 weeks holiday, 2 weeks playing for the national team, and then 2 weeks on holiday again before pre-season training. But we need to win. So you would play Ambrose and Mulgrew because you've just put the willies up me.
No, but you have
just put the willies up me to make me realise that if we don't get Denier on back, and we do, my understanding is we want to try and sell Van Dijk the day after we qualify for Champions League football.
Which is what? The last day of
We qualify for Champions League football on a Wednesday night. And then we have, and then the transfer deadline normally finishes on the Friday or the Saturday. So it stuffs us up. So so either we do that and we've got a problem, or Denier doesn't get to come back and we sell Van Dijk, because at the same time as that's our wish list, if somebody came in with a 10, 12 million pounds off of a Van Dijk in June, we are not going to say no.
Yeah.
And then that's where the willies up me has just come from. Ambrose and Mulgrew.
But then you think of Ambrose and Mulgrew, and neither of them have played together at all. At all. Like, for me, if we've already won a league, basically, okay, give them three games. Thanks, Virgil. Thanks, Jason. But these next qualification games are the most important games of our season.
I think he'd be more inclined if he was fit to play Lustig and Ambrose.
Yeah.
Oh, you put a real downer on this podcast with this Ambrose and Mulgrew thing. Well,
another thing about we're kind of screwed about the whole Van Dijk thing and we have to wait until we sell. But we know that if, say, we're going to get, say, 8 to 10 million this transfer window, something like that for Van Dijk, even if we don't get it, like even if we just waited and waited and waited and, you know, disaster for the financial guys happened that we didn't actually sell to Stoke City or Newcastle or whoever.
Yeah.
Still got two more transfer windows where we would. So surely you have to make that kind of investment that you're going to, we're going to have highly competent centre backs that we're going to invest in and we're going to have for these playoffs. And you know what? If Virgil's still here for another 6 months and we're paying his wages, which aren't sky high anyway, okay.
Yeah, well, and
it's terrible to have three high quality centre backs.
There is a strong argument of keeping Virgil gives you a better chance of qualifying for the Champions League. Qualifying for the Champions League, the money next season's increased. I think, you know, the SPL, for example, will get, if we play Champions League football next season, the SPL gets £3.5 million. So Scottish football is £3.5 million better off if we play Champions League football. Plus, we will be playing more Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff games, and we've already seen that's easily an extra 10,000 people on a home gate. So, does it pay for itself having keeping them in it? I understand the opposite of that is the way that we attract people like Van Dijk. This is the bit when people say, "Oh, we should have kept Hooper, we should have kept Wanyama." But the way that we attract Beaton, Van Dijk, Hooper, Wanyama to Celtic Park is to say, because you'll play for us in Champions League football and that will be your platform to get the move to England that you want. That's how we attract them in. Yep. So if we block a Van Dijk move, that actually makes it more difficult for us to get future Virgil van Dijks, because their agents then start to say, well, I'm not so sure about Celtic, because actually they blocked that guy and they blocked that guy when his move came up.
And there's another thing about just Van Dijk's value itself.
Yeah.
That, you know, Falcao and Jackson Martinez and James Rodriguez, they weren't, for Porto, they weren't valued and they aren't valued, or weren't, and Jackson isn't now.
Porto, Schmoto, they get humped tonight, come on.
Indeed. But they're not so highly valued because they're beating Belenenses and Maritimo and whatever. They're highly valued because they're getting humped 6-1 from Bayern Munich.
Exactly. Poppycock.
And Wanyama wouldn't have been bought for, what, 13 million had he not had that season in the Champions League.
Yep.
Van Dijk, he's had that one season in the Champions League. Say, what do you think his value will be this summer? 8 to 10 million?
Yeah, and I'm not 100% convinced he's the player we think he is. I do wonder whether he's a boom song. He's fantastic at our level and he goes to the EPL. There's a part of me says it's because he switches off, and if he goes to play at that level, he'll not switch off and he'll be fantastic. There's another part of me says no, because he just switches off and that's his nature. The longer we have him playing Champions League football and he doesn't leave us, the point is it's a peak thing, it's a graph peak. And the longer he's with us, the more it then starts to wane off that he drops down to 6-7 million. Mm-hmm. So you punt him early, is that what you do?
Then it depends. It depends on what the offer is going to be and who you have lined up. And their value as well.
Danny Wilson.
No. There's a boy called Lemos for Defensor of Uruguay. Uh-huh. Mauricio Lemos. Very good player. He's the best player in the under-21 as a centre-back. He probably isn't...
Could we get a work permit?
Did you see that from myself? I tell you who I like much more than Wilson, Suter. I know Suter's been injured for almost, you know, the majority of the season, and I'm basing my opinion on Suter on, you know, the games I saw of him with Dundee United that starts last season, 18 months ago or whatever.
Yep.
I thought he's a highly talented boy. I thought Gold was obviously superb, but I thought Suter, he was so composed in the ball. Now, I'm not saying that we buy Suter for Champions League football now, but I think we should, next season, we should be watching him, or if it would be possible to bring him and to be giving him 15 games and let him develop and then kind of gradually put him in.
I'm not disagreeing. I think centre half's a major problem for us. To have got to a position where our sellable asset is centre half, and we know that that's our strategy, to sell one player to get the money in, and his partner centre half is not ours.
Well, it's the one thing. One of the best things that Dyer said last season was his evaluation of basing a transfer policy on loan signing.
Yep.
When he said, why would you develop someone else's player?
Mm-hmm.
And that was after a week or 2 weeks after his press conference, and I thought, oh yes, good. I like the sound of this. And then obviously he brought in the loan guys. There's, apart from doing it to develop your own players, it's not a good strategy for doing a buy-to-sell transfer policy. Because basically, if you have that loan player, and he's a very good loan player, then you're basically taking, and say Denai's in the team all the time, you're basically taking, 8% of the team we can't sell. Then you have Gudetti as well, and you say, okay, well, we have two of our 11 players we're playing who we can't get any revenue from.
The only thing I do,
and you have Ponev and Wakaso. Okay, so how are we going to?
Well, the only thing I don't have a major issue with was, apart from Denier, all the others. Well, I think Gudetti was different as well because he had his contract, but certainly Ponev and Mubarak. The defence was, they had an option to buy where we got first option. In principle, I don't have an issue with, say it was Denier. Denier would be a better example. I don't have an option of, well, he's in your youth system, so we're not 100% certain that he's developed, because he's been, he was a good youth player, but he's now been not a first team player when other people have. So what we'll do is we'll take him on loan. We've got a guaranteed option to buy price. And if he's good enough, you exercise that option. I don't have a particular issue with that principle, because it's better than signing Baldy, Rasmussen, Murphy, Bangura, Brozak,
Johnson.
It's better than all those strikers that we've signed.
Pookie.
So how many £2 million strikers have we signed? 10?
There's also been...
So the principle of getting them in on loan to find out if they're any good is a better... I'm not averse to that principle.
I'm averse to the principle of buying players who are already to have been perceived to have failed in England. If we're trying to sell to a market that already perceives the player to have failed, i.e. Tonev or Samaras, the reason Samaras has never had interest from England because they'd already seen him and didn't like him.
Yep.
And so if Samaras had gone straight from Heerenveen to Celtic for £2 million and they saw him score all of those away goals in Europe, he scored against Barcelona twice, he scored against Spartak, Benfica, blah, 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 ton of a Wiggle, Dynamo Moscow.
You just reminded me how good he was. I've got a tear in my eye with reminiscing.
Now, if he hadn't had that spell in England, he would have had so much more interest in a quick 6'4" striker who's going all these away goals for Celtic. The reason he didn't have a great deal of interest because they'd already seen him. And so he eventually, Lazio overall was interested, his Spanish clubs were meant to be interested. I know he eventually went to West Brom, but it was only because it was a last-minute free deal from a Scottish manager who had been watching him. Now, kind of at the same time, we might have agreed a deal with Villa. Even if we buy him, who are we then going to sell him to?
There's no. Our best bet would be selling back to Europe, and when you sell back to Europe, you're not getting anywhere near the value you get out of the money daft Premiership. We might sell him back to someone in the middle of Europe, you know, a German team or something like that, for 4 or 5 million quid. That would be the best we would achieve. Best.
Absolutely, and yeah.
Well, I'm talking like that would be the optimum.
Yeah.
No, I agree, and it will be interesting to see over the summer what our signing strategy is. Dyla's a qualified teacher. He keeps going on and on about developing players, and he wants young Scottish talent to come through. He was brought in specifically to bring through our young players through our system that are going nowhere when they get to us. So we should be expecting to see the likes of Mackay, Stephen and Armstrong come. So perhaps a suitor shouldn't surprise people. We should be expecting to see more of our young players. But at the same time, I think for sell-on reasons, I think we will still be looking for foreign talent to come in. Patently, Ronnie Dyla doesn't fancy Skepovic, so he's going to be out the door. Yeah. Forrester allegedly in for Stokes. He's out the door. Gaudette looks to me at Christmas. Gaudette decided Celtic wasn't where he was going to be, so he's not staying. So actually, out of our pool of strikers that we've chosen from since February to start games, well, in the 4-2-3-1, where we have the one central one, we've got three, and only one. One of them is going to be there.
Yeah. Pookie and Baldy come back, and yeah, I have no idea if Bromby want Pookie or whatever. But
well, we don't want them, so they don't count, and two centre-halves. So it will be interesting to see. So is there any other players 8,000 miles away that we should be looking at?
There are loads of players. A lot of players. But then there's a difference between sensational 17-year-old kids and players who are going to be, who I would want Celtic to be playing with in the Champions League. Like, for instance, Suter and Scott, you know, I would quite like Celtic to have Suter, but only as a backup, and then to be bringing through over the course of 3 years. I'll name five, and then I won't go on and on. But
okay.
Amaral, Nacional, Pereiro, Nacional, Lemos, Defensor, in Argentina, a boy in San Lorenzo's under-16s, Conechi, the kind of Czech name or something, which would imply a more recent immigration, which would imply
his dad was his granddad was a Nazi.
He has a strange story actually, because he's down in Patagonia in this tiny little club that it prizes their youth academy more than their first team. Their whole focus is youth academy. And they brought through two players that are now in the under-17s for Argentina, but now both at San Lorenzo. The boy Kenechi, his feet are so quick. His striker scored something like 7 goals in the under-17s in the South American under-17s. If Celtic would want to look at that footage, then there's a... Now, there's a player, there's a striker for Lanús called Milano, who's 22, who's 6'1", and is very, very quick. I think he would be ready for Champions League. And there's a boy in River Reserves called Boje, who's a good striker. But for, I think he'll be a good European player.
But for Park to scout him, he's got to get a plane from Glasgow to London, London to Lisbon, Lisbon to Buenos Aires. He can't be asked doing
the problem,
all that.
The problem with the if you're, this isn't really specific to Latin America, to be honest. This is just to do with clubs using Y-Scout.
Uh-huh.
This computer program as their primary. Porto have they employ 250 scouts around the world, according to Porto themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're competing with, say, AC Milan or Real Madrid or whatever for a good young player in, you know, Argentina or wherever. Y-Scout doesn't show, say, Brazilian youth games, Argentinian youth games.
Mm-hmm.
I know they don't. So if you click on a player who's in Peñarol reserves or under-17s, who's the best kid in Uruguay, and you want to see how good he is, you're not going to see how good he is until he plays in the first team. And you know what? Porto have already seen him 15 times because they're at every game.
Yep.
They've already made their judgment. They've had people looking at him. They've taken videos, whatever. They've spoken to his agent, blah, blah, blah.
Are they scouting defenders? Sorry. You know I'm only joking because they lost 6-1.
I know.
They lost 6-1. 6-0. It was 6-0 we lost, and we've never got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, so, you know.
Anyway. But not Porto specifically, but broadly. Yeah. But if Y-Scout is your primary source for getting players out with where you can travel to, then you're behind. Arsenal are signing a boy from Belis Arsfeld for, he's a 16-year-old boy, a signing.
Mm-hmm.
The boy who's Correa at Atletico Madrid, Benfica, when he was 16, before he'd even got into the reserves of San Lorenzo, they had already made him an offer. These clubs, I go to youth games in Buenos Aires, like every other day, and there's agents and there's scouts there. Anyway,
we need to get a finger out. Equally, there is an argument of it's not like they're not like horses, where you get a really good footballer dad and a really good footballer mum and breed these kids. They're being coached.
Yeah.
There is also an argument of, would it not be cheaper to find out what the coaching, rather than going and scout, yes, for the short term you scout the players, would it not be more important to scout the scouting, to scout the coaching system?
I agree with that. I agree with that, but only to an extent that everyone plays football here. It's like, I grew up in Buckinghamshire in England, and the way my dad used to describe himself growing up in Greenock in the 1960s, going down to Battery Park, and there's like games going on everywhere, and everyone's playing all the time, and that's basically why Scotland were producing so many players.
Yeah.
Everyone played.
10,000 hours of purposeful practice.
Exactly. Everyone plays in South America. Especially in, you know, Argentina, Uruguay. Like, everyone at work, even if they're not that interested in football, they're just... You go on the buses at night and they're just, like, full of kids and, you know, like, in their training gear, crisscrossing around the city, going to five-a-side matches. That's another thing, is that there's not that many large pitches, so most of the games they're playing, it's like five-a-side games.
They
so,
don't,
you know, more touches, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
blah.
And they don't have Armageddon.
Go on.
No, I'm just saying they don't have Armageddon. In, or whatever it's called, whatever the Spanish for Armageddon is. They don't have people running, they don't have people in charge of the game who all they do is run it down.
No. No, although they do their best, to be honest.
Do they?
They've enlarged the league here to 30 teams. This is the format. In fact, I saw Celtic Rumours tweeted out that, just about an hour ago, tweeted out that I think it was from the season 16-17 that it was going to be a 16-team league.
Yep.
Now, in Argentina, they basically have double that. They have a 30-team league now. Every game is shown live on TV over a course of you know, Friday to Monday. But then, here's a weird thing. So, they play each other 29 times, but only the rivals play each other twice. So you play everyone 29 times, and then say you're Boca, you have to play River a second time.
Right. So we would play everybody, and then have to play Thistle.
Indeed, that would be our problem. Yep. The weird thing is that you get logical rivalries, but then after about say 10 proper derbies, then you just get random cities who are assigned to another random city on the other side of Argentina. They'll then have to play each other twice. And they're told by the officials, no, that's your rivalry.
Right. So actually, it is a bit like Scottish football then.
It is. Like
just random decision making that makes no sense.
No sense.
So, yep. I'm just looking at the time for I need to get to my bed and upload this and make use of a hotel's Wi-Fi for uploading it. Do you know what's strange? So I booked into the hotel and get my way up to the hotel room, come into the hotel. I'm staying in a hotel in London. Actually, I just realised you're the only person listening to this at the moment who knows. I'm staying in a hotel in London. And I get into the hotel and I phone my wife to say...
Does your wife know?
Yeah. See, so I phoned my wife to say that's me home and that's me in the room rather, blah, blah, blah. And the phone goes in the hotel. And there was a woman in the reception. Hello? Yes, hello. I'm just making sure that everything's comfortable, that everything's in order for you. I'm beginning to wonder if I've missed a trick with what type of hotel this is. And she was, that was that was a secret message for, do you want me to come up and give you a cuddle, you know? Anyway.
I assume you're right. Just leave your door ajar.
Yeah, do you think so? I'll wake up and there'll be some tramp in the room when I wake up in the morning. The laptop will be gone. So,
that's one of the most surreal finishes to Celtic Underground podcast.
Not as surreal. I don't go back through my timeline. I got a tweet today. Can you do a retweet for me? We're in Kinning Park and we've got a coffin that we need to get to Stirling. Can anybody give us a lift? So I tweeted back saying, well, I'll retweet it for you, but why? And expecting a more detailed answer, because they won't let us on the subway. Right, we've got a game on tomorrow night, Wednesday night. What's your team going to be and what's the score going to be?
Okay, Malgu, Ambrose.
Yeah, Pookie and Baldy up front with Fasan and goals. Gordon suspended?
Is he suspended? Then Fasan in goals?
It'll be Zaluska in goals, but you can go for Fasan. I'll let you do that.
I'll go for Fasan. Okay, Fasan, Izaguirre, Van Dijk, Denaya, the team. I'm going through it. I think there's going to be a huge bombshell. Nah. Beaton, Brown, Johansson. Now, here's one. Here's one. Just to slightly prolong the podcast.
Yeah.
I would play Henderson, but he's not in Scotland.
Yeah. Don't start. Don't start. Because I don't want this podcast being 2 hours and you've already got St. Anthony just peed his pants with excitement, because that's his bugbear. Look, I would rather he be playing 3 months of first team football than come on for 5 minutes for us as a sub. For the long term development of the player.
That's very sensible. However, would you prefer he came on for 5 minutes for us or 5 minutes for them?
No, I prefer he was playing. Because he's had two sub appearances so far. I think his most recent one was 15 minutes and a 1-1 draw with Stromskogshed, however Ronnie Dyler says it very quickly. With them, I would prefer him playing first team football for them.
I would prefer. Sorry to interrupt you. I would prefer that if we were sending our players, our best young player, away and we wanted to give him first team football, that we were the ones, we were the proactive ones that were doing it, rather than a last minute call from Norway that wants. And the problem is, it's the team going for a championship. They're top of the league. They need an extra. My assumption is they need an extra body for the running. But I would be amazed if they're going for a title, and the guy goes, "I tell you what, this 18-year-old's gorgeous boy. He's starting and he's ahead of the captain. Sorry, mate, you're out. I have to play this player." Now, if we're going to send him away, surely you have to have.
We should do it in Newcastle, and say you got to play him.
Yeah, which Rosenberg wouldn't do, but it would provide, say, Mulder, whoever. I want him to play, 60-plus minutes in the next 80% of your games.
Maybe we should put him on the Rangers.
I think we can end it there.
Right, so, very quickly, you're going to play Mackay Stevens and Armstrong?
Is Armstrong going to be fit?
Don't know. It's the quality.
If he was fit, if he was fit, I'd play him and I'd play Forrest either side of Johansson and with Gudetti up front. And then if it was a pretty stale match, then you could introduce a bit of movement with both Mackay Stephen and Griffiths. That'd be my idea.
Okay, and what's the score going to be?
9-0.
Excellent. Okay, and with that, I'll say good night from the London jury to Buenos Aires.
Buenas noches.
Buenas noches.
So I hope you enjoyed that podcast, got into the detail of my thoughts on things, Mark's thoughts on things, and okay, not won a treble, we're going to win 2 trophies, maybe next year, because they'll cheat us then again, like they always do. Anyway, this is enough of me, this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight. Goodnight. What do I do to make you want me? What have I got to do? What do I say when it's all over? Sorry seems to be the hardest word. It's sad. So sad.
What am I gonna do?